You know, of all the hundreds and hundreds of crop formations that seem to pop up all the time, if just one was made by a very mysterious source, it makes this investigation well worth it. And that's where I think we are headed. Up next, Simeon Hine on Coast to Coast AM as we talk about crop formations on Coast to Coast. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dr. Simeon Hine, director of the Institute for Resonance in Boulder, Colorado, the institute devoted to the study of subtle energy sciences, including remote viewing and crop circles. Simeon first learned remote viewing back in 1996 and subsequently became involved in crop circle research. Now, having witnessed the formation of crop circles made by expert crop circle making teams in England, Dr. Hine learned of the extraordinary phenomena, including telepathic experiences, balls of light, and UFO sightings that frequently surround man-made crop circles and formations. And here he is on Coast to Coast. Simeon, welcome back.
Hi, well, good evening, George, and thanks for having me here tonight.
Oh, my pleasure, too. Tell me a little bit about what it was like when you witnessed the formation of these crop circles made by expert crop circle-making teams. And as you were observing this, how did you feel? Did you say, wow, they're all hoaxes, they're all frauds at that time?
Originally, yes. I really thought that humans couldn't make these, you know, because they're so big and complex. And I thought the first one I saw actually was done in the daytime. You know, it was like a paid advertisement. It was a small formation relatively. It was kind of an R and an at sign. And, you know, that was something that, you know, took a lot of time. It was in the daytime. But then another group invited me, you know, for a bigger challenge to watch one made at night. And honestly, I really didn't think they could pull it off. And boy, was I in for a surprise. George, they were a lot better organized than I thought they would be. And they just really worked pretty flawlessly out there as a team.
And how long does it take, Simeon? Let's say at night to make one.
This one I saw at Cheryl in 2001, I believe. It took about 4 to 5 hours.
Gosh.
Yeah.
And these people aren't discovered while this is going on at all?
Well, here's a funny story about it. While we were out there in the field, and this was done in Barley, by the way, and this was not legal to do this. I mean, you can't just go into someone's field like this and legally, you know, make a crop.
Yeah, I mean, they're damaging the crops.
Well, technically, it's considered vandalization of crops. They're actually not taking the crop away, so it's not like theft. But, you know, we can talk about that more in a moment. But we were out there. I didn't actually make it. I just stood there and watched. And there was a researcher that was trying to find, you know, circle makers out that night. And the thing is, we heard the car approaching for about 10 minutes at about 3 a.m. And, you know, by the time the car even got close, we were just, you know, you just kind of wait till they go away because your night vision is so good after being out there for a few hours. And you can imagine someone in a vehicle. So, you know, there are attempts to find them, but these fields are big. It's pretty dark. And, you know, when you've been doing this for a long time, like many of these circle-making groups have been doing, you just get very good at it. And you're, you know, your ears are open. You're listening for people approaching and so forth.
Do they make these formations along with having flashlights, or do they do everything in the dark?
No, it's really mostly done in the dark. You know, in the one case, I did see a group used, you know, those CC Crane little LED flashlights that
yes.
you advertise in the show
yes,
a lot.
Yes, we still do that. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So those are used, but they're taped over almost entirely until just a few photons of light get out. It's barely anything, but it's enough to see a plan. And, you know, these have been planned out for weeks ahead of time in many cases. So each person knows what they're going to be doing, and they're really very good at it. But I should say, you know, before they start, this isn't something that's taken lightly. They actually say prayers and incantations, the groups I've seen. There's kind of an intention, just kind of like we were talking about in the previous hour. There's kind of intention yeah. put into the whole process. And I've even heard with some circle-making groups that if they go out there and it just doesn't feel right, they won't do it. They almost ask the permission of the universe first before they do it to see if it's, like, the right thing to do. And they kind of go with that feeling to decide whether to do it or not.
Oh, how many people in a team?
Well, it can range from as little as 2 people to perhaps as many as 15. And I'm told that's about the limit you can work with at night is that size group.
Because that it's too many, sure.
Yeah, it's just a lot of people, and there's more chance of making mistakes and so forth. So it works better with smaller teams that know each other well and working together for a long time.
So, I mean, even though they're making these crop formations, do they believe that some of the crop formations are coming from very strange, mysterious sources?
That's a good question. You know, some of them do and some of them don't. I'm afraid that the circle makers are kind of just like other people sometimes, and they can get kind of very rigid in their thinking also. You know, just like there are people, like I used to be, that thought that humans couldn't do this at all, anything, you know, of any large size. There are also circle makers that now think, I think incorrectly, if you look at the evidence, that they're just all done by people. I think, you know, I've spoken to a lot of people that have seen UFOs and things make them. So there are a lot of sources of crop circles. It's not just people. But some of them don't believe that anything else is doing it now, and others do. And I think you really need to take a look at the whole historical record of crop circles, you know, going back hundreds of years to really come to your own conclusions. I think you'll probably see that there are a lot of sources of crop circles. It's not just one source. It's very complex.
Where do you fit on that scale, Simeon? What's your belief?
My belief is, I'll tell you, I think the most likely scenario based on everything I've been able to kind of put together. I think if you look at the literature, you'll find that there are a lot of witnesses to, from the 70s and before, a lot of witnesses to balls of light being seen where the crop circles later appear.
Yeah.
And UFO cases. You know, Terry Wilson wrote this wonderful book that's unfortunately out of print called The Secret History of Crop Circles. You know, if anyone can find a copy, it's really worth reading. But he kind of documents going back way before the 70s. These circles have been appearing for quite a long time. And there's no doubt that they are associated with flying discs. I mean, you had the Tully saucer nest starting, I think, back in 1966 in Australia. And that went through the early 70s, where, you know, these structured disks were seen and where they'd leave behind patterns in the grasses and so forth. And there have been, you know, Colin Andrews has documented, I think, at least 50 cases where people saw balls of light, you know, walking their dogs early in the morning. But it seems definitely, from what I can tell, starting in the late 80s with Doug and Dave and other people like that, you had more and more people, you know, participating in the whole process. I mean, we can get into why that is. I think it's actually a very fascinating process. I think the human-made circles are part of the whole process. I don't see them as being fake or hoax, and we can talk about that. It's basically because they affect our cameras and batteries just like any other formation, and that's something that we really need to look into and explain a little more.
Simeon, Linda Bolton Howe, our reporter, gets so upset with me when I tell her that, you know, maybe a few percent are actually made by either dimensional forces or ET forces or mysterious forces other than man-made. And she goes nuts because she wants to believe that 80%, 90% are made from those sources, not the 1% or the 2%.
Yeah.
And I try to keep telling her, I said, Linda, all you need is one, just one crop formation that is made by non-human entities, and you've got one of the greatest discoveries of mankind. But she gets upset with that. How come?
You're absolutely right, George. Even if one is made that way, it shows that it's a much more complex phenomena. We all have a tendency, I think scientists and many of us involved in this field, we get attached to our own ideas and we become comfortable with it and we don't want to change. Honestly, George, if you had talked to me before the year 2000, I would have said the same thing as Linda, because yeah. I had gone to all the conferences and I had seen the architectural firm saying that it would take them, you know, 3 days in the daytime. And there was a lot of evidence that seems to suggest that people couldn't do this. And I got attached to that idea, too. It was kind of comfortable. You know, that something mysterious is making all of these at night, even the super big ones and the complex ones. And I don't think I really wanted people to be involved. But later when I found out that people were involved and they demonstrated this to me and I've seen them, you know, in subsequent years and so forth, I really began to wonder, well, what about all the weird phenomena that are still seen around crop circles, the balls of light, you know, the battery failure, the camera failure, all sorts of weird things that happen around them, UFO sightings. And that led me to believe that they're all real. In other words, the evolution of crop circles is a bigger process that has a UFO ET component, maybe ionic plasmas, as people used to speculate a long time ago, and a human component, and that it's kind of like a hybrid project, and that the fact that we're involved is kind of a little bit like us, as some have said, you know, children learning a language from their parents. I mean, we're learning the language of geometry and shape, and that there's hidden energy in nature that we haven't tapped into yet. Very important, you know. And perhaps if humans hadn't gotten involved, we wouldn't have had these more complex formations, which are teaching us that we have the ability to manipulate, you know, natural material into shape to create really interesting energy patterns. And that's exciting.
Has anybody talked about the possibility that this planet, the Gaia theory, it's alive, and maybe through crop formations, it's its way of communicating with us?
Yeah, you know, there's sort of an interaction between the earth and the location of it and the crop circles. The whole thing is kind of like a system. And even the human circle makers, you know, when they make these circles, they're not just looking at the field abstractly, you know, like you would from a grid. They're actually looking at the surrounding mountains and the trees and the star formations and all sorts of things. So the circles, the human-made ones, are kind of placed very carefully that way. And it has something to do with the energy of the earth, kind of feng shui, you know, this kind of alignment of energy. And so in some sense, you could see that the earth itself is kind of helping to place where the circles show up. And, you know, I used to think maybe that the crop circles were some sort of earth acupuncture or something.
Yeah. Kind of
stimulating certain points on the grid. I don't think you can discount that because, honestly, there's a lot we don't know about this phenomena. And whether it's, you know, more ET-made or human-made, to me, it's not really the question, you know, like I've said in the past. To me, they're all real because they all have this really, you know, a lot of them have this really interesting energy phenomena around them. I mean, any crop circle that can destroy my batteries in 5 seconds is real. This is the bottom line, no matter who makes it. And if you look at some of the original ones, like the Tully saucer nest, and people I've spoken to that have seen structured disks near where circles were found later, some of those are actually a lot messier than the ones that humans make. So in some sense, humans have improved on the way they look, and perhaps that's a feature of the precision of the geometry, which gives it, you know, the circle its power.
So have your batteries died in some formations?
Oh, yeah, many times. I think actually Lex posted a link up to the pictures that I've taken.
There they are.
It has happened, George, so many times when we've been over there on our tour, starting back in 1997. Almost every summer I've been in England since 1997, I have been there when either my own camera has malfunctioned, somebody else's camera. The first one that where it happened to me was 1999, the Devil's Den formation, and you can see the picture there of someone's GPS device where the batteries were totally new and they were just gone in seconds. A fellow came in before me, his video camera died, and then my static meter, which I've used to measure the static charges, you know, it was completely gone in about 3 or 4 seconds, you know, brand new batteries. So I've seen it happen many times. And I'll tell you something. We were filmed this summer by the National Geographic Channel for an upcoming documentary about next year. We're over by Silbury Hill, and we're doing the interview. And in the middle of it, they tell me, you know what? Our really expensive Betacam died about 2 weeks ago in this same circle.
It's amazing.
The batteries died, and the camera was so frozen up, they had to call London for instructions how to restart it because this instructions have to be written like the flash ROM in it or something like this. And they didn't even know how to restart it. And we've seen that so many times. So I said to them, so now you see what we're talking about. And they said, yes, they were actually much more open-minded.
How far back do crop circles go in recorded history?
You know, they seem to go at least back to the 1600s, you know, with the reports of the mowing devil. I think that was from 1678 or so in Hertfordshire in England. If they go back to the Dark Ages and before that, we don't really know. But there are reports, you know, in the Old Testament, Dead Sea Scrolls, about strange markings in the field. We know, you know, the Native Americans here in America talked about fairy circles and things like that. So they do seem to go back at least a few hundred years, if not, you know, longer than that.
All around this planet or primarily in England?
You know, if they are happening all around the planet, it's just that England is such a smaller place than the U.S., for example, that it's a lot easier to find them. And most of them in England happen within, you know, an area around Avebury and Stonehenge, so they're a lot easier to find from pilots flying overhead. It seems you might get as many in the U.S., it's just they're so spread out that if the farmer finds one, he may not know what it is, and maybe no one will even fly over it, so they'll never be discovered. And if they're happening in places like China, you know, or India, we may not find out about them. So it's really hard to say without a, you know, real scientific survey to know exactly the percentages, but certainly England does get a lot of them, no doubt about it.
If they come from non-human sources, Simeon, then one has to try to figure out, why are they in these geometric patterns? What are they trying to tell us? Is it a code? Why can't they make it more obvious? Why can't they simply spell things out if it knows we speak English? Spell it out in English in the crop formation. Why the codes? Why the formations the way they're made?
You know, we kind of assume that things that show up on Earth are going to be something that we can fit into our three-dimensional boxes.
Right.
And I got to tell you, I try to wrap my mind around this phenomena all the time. And over 10 years, I haven't been able to do it yet. It really doesn't fit into a 3D box. It's really a multi-dimensional process. And I think what the shapes are really telling us is something about the language of resonance. I really think if there's some sort of extraterrestrial communication going on here, if that's where it started, you know, several decades ago, it's really trying to show us that there's a language of shape and geometry. And if you get exactly the right resonance, the crop can become almost like a musical instrument or a generator of energy. In other words, if the pattern is just done precisely enough, it sort of ignites a certain organization of the wheat. Energy starts to flow in ways that is not ordinary, not typical. And it's actually showing us something about how shape and geometry interacts with energy, which could have very important consequences for our ability, you know, to tap into new energy sources and so forth. Basically, instead of using this kind of explosive, external, forceful technology built on combustion fuels, we could be using shape and resonance to kind of generate energy, you know, internally, like people have come on the show many times in the past, talk about the vacuum stage and free energy and so forth. So it seems to me that the whole process is leading us in that direction to think about that and to talk about that. Are there other dimensions and aspects of our environment that we've taken for granted and never tapped into before? And the crop circles really seem to, you know, activate that, because the bottom line is they're just plain weird. I mean, the shapes can be very organized, but the experiences you have in and around them are very strange and very hard to explain. And what that's showing you is there's something you don't understand about how wheat and grain crops work when they're organized in a pattern, instead of being, you know, set up in a very uniform way—the way they're usually planted by a seed planter—and
the shapes, the patterns seem to be getting more sophisticated. At least that's my assumption.
Yeah, they do. I mean, some of them to me almost look like machines now, like some sort of advanced technology. You know, there have been a lot of Mayan patterns, Aztec patterns, and you know, some of the circle makers once told me they thought of circles as natural magic. You know, it's somewhere between magic and something that's just natural. And to me, it's kind of like a natural type of technology, because you take all these stalks of grain, you organize them in a very precise pattern, and it becomes almost technological, like sort of, like kind of getting there to that edge. And it starts interacting with your own technology in ways that you may not want to happen. You can see from the photos, you know, that Lex is linked to, that a lot of the time the cameras won't work anymore. I mean, the pictures you can see there, like, for example, Colin Andrews, had one of his cameras completely stop working in the Martin cell formation. He was kind of leading us around, explaining to us how you look at it and look for patterns and so forth. And the screen stopped working. There's another picture of a camera that is never going to work again, with a very strange star-like constellation pattern in the screen. It just happened very suddenly by Silbury Hill. So, you know, it's going to interact with your technology in a way that is very unexplainable, but again, not completely unlike a lot of advances right now in material sciences, things like superconductivity, metamaterials, photonic crystals, and plasmonics. I mean, there's a lot of areas that even material scientists right now can't agree how they work and how the processes are happening. So it's something like that. It's right at the edge of science, at least the way I look at it.
Do you, when you fly over them, are you in awe at how they look?
They look spectacular from the air. There's no doubt about it. And that's why if you go over to England, you'll see a lot of people, you know, getting on ultralights and taking helicopter rides. And there's just a ton of helicopters and planes over these. I mean, sometimes when you're in the circles, the air is just thick with, you know, aeronautical vehicles taking pictures, because they look fantastic from the air. You know, it gives you a whole appreciation of the landscape because they're placed in a certain way. They're really, they reflect light in very interesting ways. And they just all around look a lot better up there. You can just see the whole pattern, and it just makes sense.
Yep. Do the farmers get upset?
Some of the farmers do get upset. Some of them have accepted it. The bottom line is there was a study done recently that I think it showed that about 8 million pounds comes into the area every summer from crop tourism. And if you work it out, that's about $150,000 per circle. So there's a lot of income coming in from it, and that also benefits the region.
It's a little bit more than a barrel of wheat, I'll tell you that. We'll be back in a moment. We'll talk about the UFO connection with crop circles and also under a microscope. How does a grain of wheat look like from a crop formation? Simeon, under a microscope, the grain of wheat, does it look different in some cases where one might say, maybe it came from other sources other than man-made?
You mean the wheat itself? Whether you can actually tell the difference in the formation by the way the wheat looks under a microscope?
Is that conceivable? Can you?
You know, here's the deal. We used to think we had a litmus test for telling the difference between the man-made ones, you know, and the so-called real ones, as we used to refer to it. There were a lot of tests we had. There, one of them, for example, was whether there's like bloom on the stalks. It's of wheat. You know, it's kind of like a bacteria that grows overnight on the wheat, and if you touch it with your feet or your hands, you know, it leaves marks.
Yeah.
And yeah, idea that you could look for these blown nodes, these kind of swollen nodes, is indicating some sort of microwave energy might have been beamed into the area. We have found, though, that in the circles we've made, the test circles, you know, paying the farmer and so forth, use the field, we got those blown nodes. There are pictures of that, you know, on my site, if you click through the link there. And we found that in our own circles, and we found the bloom actually grows back in a couple hours in the dark. So even if circle makers were there at 5 a.m. by 8 a.m., but that's, you know, George, that's what the scientific process is like. You have these things that are, you think are like tests, and that's a good thing to have. And then you find out it didn't work exactly the way you thought. So whether we can actually look at the wheat itself and tell if a board pressed on it or not, I haven't seen the evidence to show that that's really true. It's just because sometimes the pressure is very light from the board. And if there are other sources of making them, they could push down on the wheat very heavily too. If you've seen some of the pictures of UFO-made circles, those are really flattened too, if you look at some of the literature. I mean, they're really pressed down. In some cases, the ground is bare. So those could leave physical impressions on the wheat also, and it might be very hard to tell apart whether it was a board that pressed it down or the metal surface or whatever the materials are of a spacecraft.
Is there any radioactivity in the soil or anything like that?
Not generally. However, 2 years ago I was in one in East Field, and I asked a guy coming out, I said, how is it? And he said, it's radioactive. And I thought he was joking, and apparently he wasn't. He had a Geiger counter. Apparently the military had been seen over that area a few days before dropping a liquid into it or something like that. We don't know why, and apparently it was slightly radioactive. So I'm not sure that the circle itself produced the radiation, but they might have been marking it with some sort of chemical for, you know, whatever reason they were, and that left some radioactivity. But I don't think the circles themselves, from my knowledge, produce any radioactivity.
Tell me about the possible UFO connection with crop circles.
Well, you know, there is just so much evidence in the literature of people seeing these over and over again. You know, some of it's been documented, I believe, by Ted Phillips, who's been on the show in the past.
Sure.
You know, these trace landing cases in the Midwest, up in Alberta and so forth, where, you know, farmers have been out there and seen something anomalous glinting in the field. They go out, and there's either one or more discs there spinning around. Sometimes they go up and, you know, coalesce into a mothership and take off or something, and they'll find, you know, crop circles there. So I've spoken to people right here in Idaho that were picking huckleberries. It's something that happens, you know, in the late spring, early summer. And this particular individual says she was out there picking huckleberries, and a disc came right over the meadow. And it got very close to the meadow, and when it left a circle in the meadow with a radial lay, which means it was kind of splayed outwards, not in a spiral form. And what did they do? They called the Forest Service to report it. And within an hour or two, the National Guard were up there and told them to leave. They were really upset. And they came back the next day thinking they were going to go back to this wonderful huckleberry spot. The National Guard were still out there doing soil samples and wouldn't let them in the area. So, you know, there's definitely a connection, and many, many other cases where people have seen craft either creating crop formations. You know, I had a friend in Slovenia who said that she had a neighbor reported the same thing, flashing lights over the forest at night. They go out in the morning, and there's a big circle in the meadow.
And there it is.
Yeah. There it is. And there's also cases, George, where the crop formation could attract UFOs. I mean, you could conceivably imagine that if humans made one that was sufficiently sophisticated, it might attract the attention of extraterrestrials, who might want to see what the humans are up to or what their mathematical skill is. You know, you get a pretty quick reading of human mathematical skill by looking at some of these more complex formations because they're very complex. And you could see how we're evolving. I mean, that's conceivable too. These balls of light are also seen sometimes in the past creating circles, smaller, you know, groups of circles or simple circles, but they also seem to be attracted to man-made circles. And of course, as we know, experimental aircraft, things like the space shuttle, the Concorde, you know, there's that video showing those little balls of light around those experimental aircraft and such. So they seem to be attracted to crop circles and also responsible for creating them from time to time, you know, kind of orange glowing balls of light.
I always remember a case back in the 70s. A dear friend of mine was a reporter there. went out there for a St. Louis television station in Ellsbury, Missouri. There were reports of lights and UFOs. He gets there and sees a very small crop formation, almost an indentation perhaps of where a craft might have been, but a crop formation nonetheless, Simeon. And cows were walking around the perimeter of the circle.
Yeah.
There was a dead cow in the middle.
Wow.
And it was as bizarre as anything he's ever seen. Then he said, George, then you won't believe this. I looked at a tree that had been scorched on one side only, and there must have been a million dead flies scorched into the tree. And he said, I've never seen anything of it. The sheriff of Ellsbury, Missouri at the time had never seen anything like it. It's bizarre. Now, that's a story that I get from a friend of mine who I trust explicitly.
Right, and yeah.
So something happened there.
It's extremely strange. And what I still can't, you know, decide is, are the UFOs making these crop formations intentionally, or is it simply a byproduct of their propulsion system, which is actually arranging the wheat into a spiral pattern, which could, for a variety of reasons related to the way crystals work, end up creating strange effects. So is it intentional, or is it something that's, you know, the way their propulsion systems affect grain crops, or is it a combination of both? And in that case, you know, we really can't tell. We just know, apparently you're saying it left a dead cow behind and a lot of flies.
Yeah.
It's weird. I mean, it just shows a lot. There's a lot we need to learn about the UFO phenomena, but I mean, there's no doubt in my mind it's really connected to the crop circle phenomena, you know, from the beginning, it seems. And, you know, even nowadays, it's still seen from time to time, you know, associated with crop formations.
Were these formations initially very rudimentary? Do they just seem to be so simple?
Yeah, it really looks that way. If you look at the ones starting back in the early 1900s, drawings of them and so forth, they do seem to be simple circles or groups of circles. And it does seem to be my impression that the UFO-made ones, or the ones made by balls of light or plasmas, do seem to be simpler than the ones that the humans make. And it seems that the human circle makers actually make them more complex. I know a lot of people have thought that the really complex ones are the ET ones and the simple ones are the human-made ones. But
yeah.
I think it's actually the opposite of that. I think the human-made ones kind of took the basic pattern and made it more complex. But, you know, the interesting thing is one of the original circle makers that we know about in England, you know, from the Doug and Dave team, Doug Bowers, he actually visited Australia for a long time as an artist, and when he started making them in England, I don't know exactly how many those guys made, but he said what inspired them were the Tully saucer nest of Australia. Actually, they were just trying to imitate the way the Tully saucer nest looked to kind of create the feeling, you know, for the British media or something, for the people around the area that UFOs had landed there. So the whole thing kind of starts with these, you know, UFO-created at least in Tully, it was kind of grass circles, but it starts with UFOs, and then it seemed that each successive generation of human circle makers tried to outdo the previous generation and make them more complex, partly, and it's also this curiosity of exploring more complex geometry and designs. I mean, these people are really kind of like mathematician artists, and they're always trying to push the boundary of what's possible. They have this sort of inherent curiosity. I mean, many of them do. And they're also really curious about what's happening. I mean, when I've asked them, honestly, why do your circles affect my batteries and my cameras? They don't know. So they know they have this impetus to keep doing this, but they don't understand why the effects are happening, which we can see, you know, from year to year.
Simeon, tell me a little bit about the plasma, the ionic plasma circles.
Well, you know, one of the original theories was that there were these kind of vortexes of plasmas coming down from the upper atmosphere, you know, these kind of electrically activated, you know, air, basically that would coalesce into a ball and kind of have an electrostatic effect on the ground. It was originally from the work of Terence Meaden, and it was the idea that these plasmas were actually creating the crop circles. As the crop circles became more complex in the late 80s, it was really kind of hard to see how just a simple plasma could create something so big. But having said that, I have seen plasmas over in England. Someone once took a picture of me walking down one of the streets there in Devizes, and in the photo you can see this stream of energy coming down from the sky into the church steeple, which is something like an ionic plasma. It's some sort of electrical discharge coming down through the air. So I have seen something like that. I actually haven't seen one make a crop formation. But that was one of the original theories about why they were made. And as we said before, you know, Colin Andrews has documented, at least I believe it's around 50 cases, where people have actually seen these glowing balls over the field. And then when they go out there, there's a simple circle or a group of circles. In one case, I believe they were seen kind of moving across the field, and they kind of grow across, go across the field, the circles do. But the more complex formations really do seem to be associated with something else. They don't seem to be made by those plasmas from, you know, my experience.
Could these plasmas have been sent down from above, from E.T. Craft, for example?
Well, you know, there's no way to rule it out. We actually don't know exactly what they are. Ball lightning, which is one type of plasma, is not very well understood, and it doesn't last very long, and it certainly doesn't have the coherent form that we see. You know, in one of these videos, I think we see from Steve Alexander, I believe it was 1990, where he kind of photographed one coming across Eastfield, and then it went over a tractor. You know, the tractor driver saw it, and he said that it looked like a glowing beach ball, and it actually caused his diesel tractor to stall for a few seconds. You can actually see it on the videotape because Steve was up there, I believe, on Milk Hill, and he actually was videotaping the whole thing, and it took a while to locate the tractor driver. So the thing about these balls of light is they seem a lot more coherent and a lot longer lasting than ball lightning. So they seem to be something else, and they really, you know, if you look at some of these videos, they really seem to me almost intelligently controlled. I mean, they seem to have some directionality and intentionality, which you wouldn't expect from just, you know, ionized gases. So it's really kind of mysterious what exactly they are. I don't think you can rule out that there's some sort of probe being released by an extraterrestrial craft to kind of inspect the circles, because they just seem to sometimes make right angles. I mean, they could be a life form that we don't know about. That's always possible. Or there could be a probe. That's certainly something, you know, you can't rule out.
So, I mean, what have these crop circles done to you in terms of your massive interest in it? You know, it's become your life, your future, your livelihood. You investigate. What is it about the crop formations? What did they do to you?
You know, what they really do to you is show you that you can't really explain everything as simply as you think you can.
Yeah.
When you encounter these phenomena, you know, when you go in there with your trusty camera and it just stops working, and then it happens again in another crop formation, or the other devices you have just stop functioning so quickly like that, and then you begin to see that there's some energy there. You can almost feel it tangibly, but you can't quite identify what it is. It simply shows you that the current paradigms you have in your mind are not sufficient to explain what you're dealing with. And I'm like everyone else. I mean, I'm always trying to kind of fit some of these things into boxes, even if they're a little different boxes than society typically uses to explain things, you know, like a lot of topics that are often talked about on Coast. You know, even those boxes don't fit it. It's almost like trying to fit something that's multidimensional into flatland. You know, it just doesn't work. And what it really does is show you that you have a really long way to go. It's almost like enticing you with this prize. There's something so fascinating there, and you really have to stretch your mind to try to get around it, but you just can't. And so basically it humbles you, and it shows you there's just a lot we don't understand, and you really can't take anything for granted. It's just there's a lot of possibilities and a lot of aspects of nature and the way energy works and the way materials work that we simply are just learning about right now, and the possibilities are just very exciting because it suggests, George, that, you know, you and I and other people, we could go out and make a shape, and it would be energetically active in a way that we can't explain. That's really exciting. I mean, perhaps, you know, if we can make crop formations that drain batteries, maybe we could make one that charges batteries. And we're interacting with something that's just very interesting. And it just keeps pulling, you know, a lot of us that are in this field, it keeps pulling us back to keep going back there to kind of understand, you know, what exactly is going on.
And tell me about the sacred geometry that these crop circles seem to be revolving around.
Yeah, you know, a lot of them are really created in these sort of sacred geometry shapes. And a lot of them are created around spirals. And not all of them, especially this year, we had a lot that are a lot more stylized, you know, look like animals and so forth. But a lot of them are in this sort of sacred geometry form. And when you look at it that way, you realize that the wheat, even though it's made of a solid material, it actually acts like a liquid because it can be shaped and the wheat can kind of flow. In other words, it's movable. And from that point of view, the crop formation is kind of acting like a liquid crystal. In other words, if you can imagine this, each stalk of wheat is like a crystal, but it's not locked in place. It can move just like the crystals on our flat panel displays. And so when you line all of the crystalline stalks up that way in a sacred geometry shape, they acquire resonance. The formation as a whole, acquire some sort of coherency, just like a sacred site, a stone circle, a pyramid, or other places like that that have a certain energy because of the coherency of the shape. The crop circle, you know, by virtue of the precision of it and the symmetry, seems to have that crystalline component to it that makes it act like a sacred site. And I just want to point out to the Coast audience that I posted something, you know, on the Crystal Blue Mind, which is linked from the Coast site. Okay. It's a channeling session we did with Mother Earth, channel, you know, Pepper Lewis channeling Mother Earth many years ago. And she was one of the first people to talk about crop circles acting like crystals. I just put it up because, you know, the Coast audience is very open-minded and very kind of educated.
Yep, absolutely.
And I think they'll enjoy listening to that. She's the one, when we tried to say, what about the fakes, the imitations, she's the one who said they're all real, they all have energy, and there's a crystalline aspect to it, which she actually, George, she said had a military application which was so powerful we wouldn't be allowed to understand it until about this year because there was a potential for abuse. And that's what kind of got us looking at it from the point of view of crystals. And having looked at it that way for about 10 years now, you can really see a lot of components of crop circles that they could act like liquid crystals and have a lot of the properties of crystals, which you know, because I'm sure you played with crystal radios as a kid.
Absolutely.
Crystals can transform frequencies from one frequency to another. They create resonance. They, you know, they move frequencies around in different ways. And that could be what the crop circles are doing. Maybe they're not generating energy, but taking light or other spectrums and electromagnetic frequencies and converting them in some way that we don't understand, like a crystal radio, and producing some result that we can't explain. So it's like a technology we don't understand yet.
Simeon, what about the possibility that the crop formations are but a mere experiment, government experiments on, let's say, mind control or some ability to physically alter things with the mind? Possible?
I haven't seen a lot of evidence that the government is involved with this. Back in the early days, it did seem that there was some government interest. If you talk to some of the researchers active in the late 80s and the early 90s before I got involved in the mid-90s, I haven't just seen that from my own perspective that the government, you know, is really making them or is that interested in them. But having said that, if there was a technological discovery to be discovered out of this that was very important, like Pepper Lewis was telling us at that time, then you would imagine they would be interested. And just to give an example, you know, one of the early researchers that I heard talking about quasi-crystals, a guy named Edgar Fouché talking at the Laughlin UFO conference many years ago, mentioned that quasi-crystals were a highly classified technology used on black-budget aircraft because they could literally make aircraft almost invisible to radar. And he was suggesting that crystals and quasi-crystals and this whole area of technology had a big defense significance. And if crop circles have some of those properties, you know, they're acting like photonic crystals. These are materials that bend light and create invisibility. If crop circles even have slightest potential to have some of those properties, they could be of a lot of interest, you know, to the defense community.
Let's take phone calls with you next when we come back. Simeon Hine, our guest on Coast to Coast AM.